Today we'll be continuing The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Chapter 6, Part 2. I like her, said Daisy. I think she's lovely. But the rest offended her, and inarguably because it wasn't a gesture but an emotion. She was appalled by Westig. This unprecedented place that Broadway had begotten upon a Long Island fishing village. Appalled by its raw vigor that chafed under the old euphemisms, and by the too obtrusive fate that herded its inhabitants along a shortcut from nothing to nothing. She saw something awful in the very simplicity she failed to understand. I sat on the front steps with them while they waited for their car. It was dark here in front. Only the bright door sent 10 square feet of light volleying out into the soft black morning. Sometimes, a shadow moved against a dressing room blind above, gave way to another shadow, an indefinite procession of shadows, who rouged and powdered in an invisible glass. "Who is this Gatsby, anyhow?" demanded Tom suddenly. "Some big bootlegger?" "Where'd you hear that?" I inquired. "I didn't hear it, I imagined it. A lot of these newly rich people are just big bootleggers, you know." "Not Gatsby," I said shortly. He was silent for a moment. The pebbles of the drive crunched under his feet. "Well, he certainly must have strained himself to get this menagerie together." A breeze stirred the gray haze of Daisy's fur collar. "At least they are more interesting than the people we know," she said with an effort.
"You didn't look so interested."
"Well, I was." Tom laughed and turned to me.
"Did you notice Daisy's face when that girl asked her to put her under a cold shower?"
Daisy began to sing, with the music in a husky, rhythmic whisper, bringing out a meaning in each word that it had never had before and would never have again. When the melody rose, her voice broke up sweetly, following it in a way contralto voices have, and each change tipped out a little of her warm human magic upon the air. "Lots of people come who haven't been invited," she said suddenly. "That girl hadn't been invited. They simply forced their way in, and he's too polite to object."
"I'd like to know who he is and what he does," insisted Tom. "And I think I'll make a point of finding out."
"I can tell you right now," she answered. "He owns some drug stores, a lot of drug stores. He built them up himself." The dilatory limousine came rolling up the drive. "Good night, Nick," said Daisy. Her glance left me and sought the lighted top of the steps, where 3 o'clock in the morning, a neat, sad little waltz of that year was drifting out the open door. After all, in the very casualness of Gatsby's party, there were romantic possibilities totally absent from her world. What was it up there in the song that seemed to be calling her back inside? What would happen now in the dim, incalculable hours? Perhaps some unbelievable guest would arrive. A person infinitely rare and to be marveled at. Some authentically radiant young girl who, with one fresh glance at Gatsby, one moment of magical encounter, would blot out those 5 years of unwavering devotion. I stayed late that night. Gatsby asked me to wait until he was free, and I lingered in the garden until the inevitable swimming party had run up, chilled and exalted from the black beach, until the lights were extinguished in the guest rooms overhead. When he came down the steps at last, the tan skin was drawn unusually tight on his face, and his eyes were bright and tired.
"She didn't like it," he said immediately.
"Of course she did."
"She didn't like it," he insisted. "She didn't have a good time."
He was silent, and I guessed at his unutterable depression.
"I feel far away from her," he said. "It's hard to make her understand."
"You mean about the dance?"
"The dance?"
He dismissed all the dances he had given with a snap of his fingers.
"Old sport, the dance is unimportant."
He wanted nothing less of Daisy than that she should go to Tom and say, "I never loved you." After she had obliterated 4 years with that sentence, they could decide upon the more practical measures to be taken. One of them was that after she was free, they were to go back to Louisville and be married from her house, just as if it were 5 years ago.
"And she doesn't understand," he said. "She used to be able to understand. We'd sit for hours."
He broke off and began to walk up and down a desolate path of fruit rinds and discarded favors and crushed flowers. "I wouldn't ask too much of her," I ventured.
"You can't repeat the past." can't repeat the past," he cried incredulously. "Why, of course you can." He looked around him wildly, as if the past were lurking here in the shadow of his house, just out of reach of his hand. "I'm going to fix everything just the way it was before," he said, nodding determinedly. "She'll see." He talked a lot about the past, and I gathered that he wanted to recover something, some idea of himself, perhaps, that had gone into loving Daisy. His life had been confused and disordered since then. But if he could once return to a certain starting place and go over it all slowly, he could find out what that thing was. One autumn night, 5 years before, they had been walking down the street when the leaves were falling, and they came to a place where there were no trees and the sidewalk was white with moonlight. They stopped here and turned toward each other. Now it was a cool night with that mysterious excitement in it which comes at the two changes of the year. The quiet lights in the houses were humming out into the darkness, and there was a stir and a bustle among the stars. Out of the corner of his eye, Gadsby saw that the blocks of the sidewalks really formed a ladder and mounted to a secret place above the trees. He could climb to it, if he climbed alone. And once there, he could suck on the pap of life, gulp down the incomparable milk of wonder. His heart beat faster as Daisy's white face came up to his own. He knew that when he kissed this girl, and forever wed his unutterable visions to her perishable breath, his mind would never romp again like the mind of God. So he waited, listening for a moment longer to the tuning fork that had been struck upon a star. Then he kissed her. At his lips' touch, she blossomed for him like a flower, and the incarnation was complete. "Through all," he said, even through his appalling sentimentality, "I was reminded of something, an elusive rhythm, a fragment of lost words that I had heard somewhere a long time ago. For a moment, a phrase tried to take shape in my mouth and my lips parted like a dumb man's, as though there was more struggling upon them than a wisp of startled air. But they made no sound. And what I had almost remembered was uncommunicable forever." Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Bree Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of The Great Gatsby.